Welcome to Ruby Rider's Pegging Paradise. This is July 29th, 2013. Changing the world one ass at a time. So this is a special podcast. This is a special edition one on a particular and really important topic. So let me tell you what that is. Okay, I had a request for a podcast about the potential of pegging causing permanent damage to rectal tissues, anal sphincters, pretty much anything involved in the act of pegging. So this is a podcast about only that. I'm going to separate it out because I wanted this podcast to be easy to find, easy to refer to, easy to access, and not combined with any other podcast information. So I wanted to do it separately. So a while ago, I wrote an article about this on my blog, and I kind of smart-ass, tongue-in-cheek, called it, Can I Ruin My Ass Forever? You know, F-O-E-V-A-H. And this time, I'm going to title this something along the lines of, Can Pegging Cause Damage? Because I really want this information to be ultimately searchable for all the people who are wondering this exact question. Because I think there's a fair amount of us. So I'm going to choose a title that describes the content the best. And so here's the story behind how I got this information. I wrote that aforementioned article, Can I Ruin My Ass Forever?, back in May of 2012. And I was just like the rest of you, looking for information and advice on the internet to make sure that pegging was safe, to find out if there were any information I could find, any studies, anything about potential damage. And you know, that's what I do, you guys, when I don't know the answer to something, I research it, whether it's something that you've asked me or I'm wondering. The internet's an amazing place. But the only problem is that very few people have written about it. I did find a post by Violet Blue that I linked to and quoted, and it was buried pretty heavily, and it was on a Facebook post, I believe. The part of it that I quoted is this: the notion of losing bowel control due to frequent anal penetration is a hurtful myth, perpetuated by our culture's shame about anal sex. It is usually directed at gay men, though since anal sex has become popular with heterosexual couples, that myth has followed into mainstream culture, no thanks to pundits who confuse opinion for fact, such as Dr. Drew. So before I move on, I'd like to take this opportunity to say to Dr. Drew a big fuck you, just on principle and for being sex negative and for general assholery. You're a horrible source of misinformation when it comes to anal sex, Dr. Drew. Okay, moving right along. Dan Savage actually addressed this question a couple of times on his show that I have heard, and usually his colorful response was something along the lines of, if it were true that anal sex could result in fecal incontinence, then in the gay neighborhoods in San Francisco or other places where a lot of gay people live, they would be selling lots of Depends in the mini marts on the corners, and they're not, because it's not true. Which is a funny thing, but, you know, between Violet Blue's assertion that I just read you and Dan Savage's colorful reassurances, you know, these are not based on studies or a quote that anybody could link to. And when I posted the quote from Violet Blue, I actually received a comment on that blog post that had a lot of really specific physiological information and was obviously written by a medical professional of some sort. So I proceeded to dig for information, and I got a lot of it. What I didn't get was the identity or credentials of the commenter, who preferred to remain anonymous for obvious reasons. So all of this is still unverified, but to me it feels like the best and most physiologically specific and accurate information I have found anywhere, so I'm going to put it out there. To give you a little background, one of the things that I mentioned on the article that I wrote was something that Violet Blue asserted in her post, and that was that anal sphincters are actually muscles that get stronger with exercising. So through anal stimulation and anal sex, you know, you end up with sphincters that are stronger than before. So it's actually healthy to exercise them, so to speak. And no, you can't, it's not going to be a situation where you stretch them out and you end up with fecal incontinence. So at that, with that background, I'm going to start reading the comment here and go from there. I'm a supporter, and this post will probably get deleted, but talk to a surgeon or spend some time in dissection, and you'll see that it's not really a myth. Many of the muscles in the anal sphincter are composed of smooth muscle, which are used in your eyelids and a couple other places. Smooth muscle does not become stronger with use. It cannot withstand significant trauma, but it is fairly elastic and you have to stretch it quite a bit to cause irreversible damage. Depending on your physiology, that limit is probably a one-time stress to a diameter two times as large as your average stool. If you're hammering, quote unquote, that diameter is probably a lot smaller. But since we don't have much in the way of before and after clinical exams, nobody really knows the safety limits. Because the supplementary muscles are very strong and we can control them, many people think that it's simply a question of relaxing. It isn't. In truth, by the time you can consciously relax the voluntary sphincter to admit large objects, the smooth muscle has probably had a tear or two and isn't much of a concern anymore. From a practical point of view, all it did anyway was keep small amounts of flatulence and liquid waste, parentheses, mostly water not absorbed in the large bowel, from escaping, not a big problem with most diets. The ring can tolerate about 2 or 3 significant, parentheses, painful, tears before it loses enough function to be unimportant in your ability to tolerate, quote, intrusion, end quote. On the bright side, many overweight or obese people will already have suffered one or more of these tears starting as early as puberty, so it's not the end of the world. You can get these events from constipation, straining, or unusually dry or large bowel movements. This is why so many people think there's no problem with introducing objects into the rectum. Can you wreck it from repeated trauma? Certainly. You don't have to watch much porn to see serious problems in people who have voluntarily subjected themselves to trauma. But thanks to our voluntary control of the other muscles, it doesn't mean you'll need diapers. For the most part, until you're in your late 70s, the only person who will suffer from minor anal incontinence will be the person who does your laundry. Lastly, there's no science, but the prostate can indeed be bruised with negative effects. Trim those nails and don't use hard objects. Good luck. Okay, so I responded to his comment and said this. I am always interested in corrections, information, and differing viewpoints, so of course I would not delete your comment. I love learning. First of all, thank you. This is excellent and very specific physiological information. I'm curious to know your qualifications because you sound quite knowledgeable. I'd like to disseminate this information in a more front-page way on all the forums and websites I participate in to everyone who is looking for it, as opposed to hoping they find it hidden in the comments of a blog post. But I'd love to know your qualifications first. Messaged to me in private if you wish. So tell me if I have this right, please. Number one, muscle tone of the inner sphincter is not built up or improved with more strap-on play. Can it be for the outer sphincter? Number two, it is not all about relaxing. Small tears can occur, but they are no more serious than tears which can occur normally with constipation, straining, or unusually dry or large bowel movements. Number three, quote, but thanks to our voluntary control of the other muscles, it doesn't mean you'll need diapers, end quote. I want to understand here. There are two sphincters in the rectum, right? The inner sphincter is involuntary and the outer is voluntary. So does that mean that the damage you describe is only to the inner involuntary and the outer voluntary overrides the damage in terms of possible incontinence? Number four, after all that, as long as you're, quote, reasonable, end quote, in your play, not too large, too fast, too hard, sharp objects, you are likely not going to have a problem. And here was his reply. P.S. Please don't get the idea that I'm bashing your stand. I just spend a lot of time around asses. Violet Blue's expertise on that question is a valuable opinion, just like that of some random proctology surgical tech who fancies a good time now and then. I would submit that asking a jockey what's good for the horse will get an answer that might not match up with that of the honest racetrack vet. Kai responded to that and said, "Interesting analogy, and one that makes me even more curious about your qualifications. Most people who love anal play come to the question of damage and incontinence at some point. I have never heard such a detailed explanation in relation to anal play. Again, thank you. I imagine that few professionals would want to be connected to anything having to do with anal play, right? So the chance that there would be a professional that would step forward publicly and make these statements is probably just about nil. Anal pleasure is often still the thing no one talks about, except in the kinky circles and on the kinky websites. Welcome, by the way. On behalf of the anal play community, thank you for stepping forward, even anonymously." So he responded, and actually these next two very long comments, full of amazing amounts of information, were not posted on my blog. I held them back because I wanted to get them in a different format and type them up and post them on Reddit and things like that. So here we go with the next comments. "Sorry, anonymous for a reason. You can repost on Reddit, but some doctors smoke cigars even though they know the risks. But they generally don't smoke a cigar a day either. It's the same with everything else as well. Humans are pretty creative, and this particular hobby of yours has been around, documented, for at least 5 or 6,000 years, and has flourished more than once in the last 7 centuries. It's not unlike drinking diet or regular soft drink every day. It's slowly stripping away your enamel and etching your teeth with every sip, but it's not actively killing you. If you cut down to 1 or 2 per week, the effect is still noticeable to people who pay close attention, but nowhere near as bad as people who drink soft drinks every day. If you drink soft drinks every day, especially if you consume 2 or more soft drinks or nurse a large one all day, I guarantee that your teeth will develop hairline cracks, start losing structural integrity, and suffer significant loss of enamel. Total elapsed time to seeing the damage, 10 years on average, perhaps 20 if you have amazing genes, but you won't see any change from one day to the next, until it's way too late to realize how far it's gone. Your hygienist may not even notice any change unless he or she keeps amazingly detailed records. Luckily, the story for the other end of the alimentary canal is a bit different, at least until you get near the end of your life. Human anatomy is not really standardized. It's just generally amazingly similar in form and function between individuals. A quick review of any decently illustrated anatomy book will give you a good idea of how the equipment is generally connected, but it won't tell you much about the actual equipment you'll be working with. It won't tell you how far you can dilate a rectum without causing trauma, or how much, parentheses, long technical term that translates into how vigorously and with what friction coefficient you can thrust against the mucous membranes, also known as action, will result in noticeable micro tears or scarring. And it certainly won't tell you how much impact the prostate can take without causing significant cell damage. Why? We have no data, just a few random anecdotes. Try getting a public health grant to study the physiomechanics of anal sex. It will never happen. The best one could hope for is to persuade someone to wrap the research into a series of rather technical porn films, but no credible doctor would touch it. And even if 50 couples were to agree to submit to a clinical study, there are no protocols, instant loss of reputation, and with that, loss of income. If you think the syphilis experiments were ethically problematic, you'd probably have to admit that inducing various failures in the rectum for science might be a bit sketchy. So we're not going to accumulate credible scientific evidence, period. Luckily, we have inference, personal experience, and some clinical data from ER trauma cases. It's not uncommon for patients to be admitted for clinical observation after blunt object trauma or in cases of rape. It's not exactly the same because in many of these cases the patient was attacked or assaulted. That's very, very different from willing and consensual activity, but it at least gives us a reference point to calibrate our conclusions with. Most of the trauma occurs from involuntary action, inadequate lubrication, and unrealistic expectations. Really, what kind of fool thinks putting a glass object into a rectum is a good idea? But rather than write a treatise, let me just hit the highlights. Penetration through walls, hemorrhoids, minor and major friction tears, sphincters being torn or split, large muscle tears, prolapse, and bruising. Through wall penetration probably won't happen if you pick your objects correctly. If it's pointy, it had better be really, really soft. Otherwise, non-rigid objects are unlikely to perforate unless they're moving really fast or have a significant length of travel relative to diameter, or unless you're already at the limit of accommodation. Hemorrhoids. The big H is usually what causes pain and bleeding for most people. If you sit all day or have children or eat a lousy diet, you'll eventually suffer from a little red blood sting and pain, and occasionally a thrombosed vein might break and scare you. Eat more fiber and drink less pop. It looks scary and terrible, but hardly anyone ever died from a bleeding bottom. Now the minor and major friction tears. Friction tears can be avoided with lubrication to a great extent, but it depends on viscosity, heat, and displacement. If you're well coated and not moving fast enough to displace or dry out the lubricant, you should be okay. If you're moving quickly, or the lubrication is being absorbed or going away due to other things, or the viscosity is changing from heat, you can start tearing things. You might even trigger a tear in an existing thrombosed vein, and then you'll be bleeding for a while. It can be scary, but they'll probably heal up. If the object is significantly larger than the opening, lubricant can be wiped off enough that dry spots develop, and then bad things happen more often. It's like the difference between dusting your windows and scrubbing them. Even glass can suddenly cause friction if you press hard or fast enough. Minor tears will open the cells on the top layer, and it isn't very thick, just a few cells. But major tears will shed layers or cause bleeding. They'll probably heal, but it can take days or weeks. I'll leave out the disease vectors, susceptibility to infection, and immune response from this, but you should try to keep everything reasonably sterile. I guess flora and fauna are a completely different topic, but let's just say that interesting things happen with improvised lubes. Saliva is basically worthless. Okay, now we talked about sphincter tears. All sphincters have four maximums: how far, how fast, how often, and rest recovery time. You cannot judge the limits by anything other than direct visual observation, which is unlikely, and pain. The problem is that pain usually occurs as the failure limit is breached. A tear or breach will heal, but it will change the equation because it now consists of scar tissue. Elasticity is reduced with each tear, and after around 3 tears, it is unlikely to close completely ever again. It's common for this to happen even without objects. This isn't the end of the world for your sport, because a lot of people, men and women, manage to tear them via repeated fecal constipation starting at puberty and even in infants. It hurts a lot, but then it stops hurting and life goes on. It isn't debilitating, but you'll need to wash more often. It can be worse with loose stools or fluid leakage, especially if you strain a lot or have gas. But, you know, this is a new word to me, sharding is now apparently mainstream, so I wouldn't worry too much. A major muscle tear is a bigger issue. It's seen with blunt object trauma and rape. You can have ongoing pain issues from something like this because the muscles will heal again one way or the other, and it might not be how you want it to heal. You can avoid this by limiting the size and length of your objects. Past this, you're in fisting territory, and you should ask someone else. Vaginas are way better at size excursions than rectums, largely because the muscles stretch a lot better. Prolapse is caused by the lining separated from the relatively weak support structure. It happens even without sex, and it's a well-known phenomenon with lots of documentation. Limiting size and speed and using proper lubrication will go a long way. Apart from muscle decay, you'll basically have to actively pull or push the rectum out to make that happen. Repeated attempts with inadequate lubrication can cause this to get started. And then the last one. Which is prostate bruising. Bruising is important, but I would suggest that you avoid objects and activities that, if imitated in your mouth, would damage, hurt, or bruise your soft palate. This immediately rules out the use of Captain Crunch cereal and milk as a lubricant. Love the humor. There is some evidence from the prostatic massage crowd that the prostate gland can be harmed, by repeated impact from rigid objects. But everything is anecdotal at this point. In general, I'd be more worried about friction and rough impact on the prostate than I would the sphincter. Steer away from glass, hard plastic, wood, and the like in favor of softer objects, and make sure things slide over rather than impact. This implies that the shape and materials should be examined closely. You should be very careful about fingernails of even normal length. Put a cotton ball or two in the fingertip of your glove if you have even normal length fingernails. And don't use bare hands. Finally, stretching will occur, but over time, the outer sphincter will almost always recover from anything other than tearing or splitting. Some people feel that they can go to the bathroom more easily if they periodically do things like this, but some have the opposite experience. Anatomy varies, so there is no one rule fits all recommendation. It's more important to watch for edema, which is puffiness, around the rectum. I suspect that's how you know when to lay off for a day or two. On the whole, within limits, this is probably 50 times safer than riding a motorcycle. If you're going to be gentle, it's probably very low risk. If you're going to slam it and slam it hard, fast, and often, you should probably be more concerned about lubrication and trying not to pulverize the prostate with pointy, hard, or rigid objects. Many of the toys being marketed are probably too hard for repeated direct impact on this gland, and there is some evidence that too much pressure may be bad, making infections worse. It is a gland, after all. They're not particularly rugged. Go buy a bratwurst, warm it up, and put a condom on it. You'll break it long before you'll break anything else. And, like I said, some doctors smoke. Then I got another comment, and here's the information from that. Okay, here's the anatomical info. You can get a pretty good illustration from, and then he put a link to a really good illustration of the pelvis and the organs and everything, the male pelvis and the female pelvis. And I am going to actually copy those and put them on the blog as opposed to hot link to them. And so here's what he says. Look at the two illustrations called male pelvis and female pelvis. Keep in mind, these are colorized anatomy illustrations and the actual bodies are from people who donated themselves to science. Hence, the openings appear larger than they usually are in people who still move. You can see a couple of interesting things, including the relationship between the inner and outer sphincters. Keep in mind that these are normally closed. In some people, the distance through the anal canal is pretty short, an inch or so, and in some people, it can be 2 times that, or more rarely, 3 inches, very rarely. The distance to the posterior lobe of the prostate gland is usually around 1/3 to 1/2 the distance to the sigmoid colon, and the shape and the size of the bowel cavity varies quite a bit based on genetic and environmental factors. It can be as little as 1/4 of the distance, depending on age or height. In the illustration labeled rectum and anal canal, you will see why people feel pain under varying conditions. The photographic illustrations don't show the valves and the relationship and functions of the sphincters very well. The first place where pain can appear is from forcing the exterior or interior sphincter past the elastic capability limit, especially if you do it quickly or without adequate preparation. Ouch! If the trauma or stretching occurs very slowly, your body can repair the scar tissue in a way that accommodates displacement and simulates greater elasticity. The next place is upon contact and displacement of the rectal valves. You have some ability to move these out of the way or relax them. But in essence, you're trying to convince the rectum that it should open up. Your ability to do this may vary, but few people can pull this trick off the first few times. Millions of women experience this, and I guess many men, from over-enthusiasm from their partners, who get in a little ways and then decide to seal the deal before the body has adjusted. Big mistake, because there's a good chance that the healing will leave large nodes of scar tissue in places that make future activities painful, apart from the psychological issues. This is why some people feel pain with small objects that other people can barely notice. The external anal sphincter is quite strong and resilient, and it has 3 sets of backup muscles that work together. You have to really push it to traumatize all of these to the point that you can't function anymore. But the interior sphincter isn't quite so rugged. But again, it can be damaged naturally enough that it doesn't really come into play that much in a large number of adults. So that's the deal. We've been around for millions of years, and our bodies are designed to try and cope with being torn apart by fangs and claws, short of perforation or intentionally, accidentally exceeding the "it still feels okay" limit. You're probably okay to play around like this with a little caution. But anyone who thinks using objects around 3 fingers wide is no big deal probably has already done about as much damage as they can to the interior sphincter. Beyond this, soreness is your best guide, although pain will probably be referred away to your lower abdomen or perineum rather than feeling like your ass hurts. Note, if it stings or causes sharp pains, you should stop immediately and do something else for a day or two. Ask yourself if you're hitting rectal valves or potentially bruising tissue. Repeated and frequent bruising can lead to cancer or other annoying things. Once or twice a month is probably the limit for your high-speed pile driver imitations. Watch for puffiness in the rectal folds and be patient if you see swelling that wasn't there before. Minor swelling is to be expected, but if it looks really puffy, it's time to back off for a while. Also, don't put hydrocortisone or cortisone products in the rectum. They thin out skin layers, which is the last thing you want in an already thin layer of cells. And by the way, this is not medical advice. Your mileage may vary. I'd just like for people to understand the anatomy before they get crazy. A rectum is a lot of things, but it isn't a coffee can. So that's it. That is all the information I have to offer, ending on that strange note about a coffee can. I'm going to be typing all this up to post it on Reddit and my blog and a few other places where there are people concerned about the long-term effects of pegging. What I'm doing here is I'm trusting that the information I've received is accurate to the best of this person's ability. There's, of course, no way to know for certain, and we've already talked about the reasons why it can't be confirmed, but I've chosen to believe it. So you can do what feels right for you. Just don't listen to asshole Dr. Drew, right? And if you're a health professional who would like to either add your voice anonymously to confirm the accuracy of this information, add to it to expound upon some points in a manner that wasn't explained specifically enough to your satisfaction, or if you would like to dispute it anonymously, please feel free to send me a message at ruby@peggingparadise.com, or you can just comment on the podcast posting. And then last but far from least, to the health professional who took the time to give me all this information, I give you my hearty thanks for the time you took to explain all this and your attempt to put it all into perspective for those of us who are really passionate about pegging. I apologize that it took me this long to share it with the world, and I'm going to put it out there as widely as I can to reassure those of us who practice pegging in a reasonable manner that we really don't have much to be fearful about, despite all the alarmist claims of anywhere you look in the medical community that is all wrapped up in its taboos and sex negativity where anal sex is involved. That's my Can Pegging Cause Permanent Anal Damage podcast. Please feel free to share this as widely as you are able. I think it's really good information to get out there in the community. You can follow me on Twitter @Ruby_writer. You can like me on Facebook. Subscribe to my blog. My podcast is on iTunes and also available directly from my blog at my website. Please go to iTunes and rate my podcast and write me a review. I would be really, really appreciative. Send all your questions and stories to ruby@peggingparadise.com, or you can click the Write Ruby links at the upper right of every page of my blog. Thank you, as always, for downloading and listening, and happy pegging!